So I was married about 26 and a half years ago, and one of the big challenges that I set myself for my actual wedding was I made the perhaps mistake of inviting one of the country's preeminent etiquette experts to my wedding. I've mentioned to you before that I grew up with Margabelle Young Stewart, who taught the Nixon children etiquette and connected to the Kennedy White House and taught many different children etiquette in the White House and around the world. She was the one who knew just how to place your silverware. She was the one who knew just how to give the perfect gift and just how long it should take to send a thank you note. Note to self, next time I get married, don't wait 364 days to send a thank you note to an etiquette expert. Just saying. Well, on that day that we got married, Margabelle Young Stewart, etiquette expert, did what you would expect an etiquette expert to do. She made everyone feel comfortable, and she gave us one of the most beautiful and meaningful gifts. She gave, really, to me, a groom's vase. Actually, it was a groom's vase. It was a high lead content crystal cut vase. It's gorgeous. It's well made. It catches the light. And she gave me these instructions. Never let a week go by without filling this vase with fresh flowers for your bride. That lasted 2 weeks. It was a wonderful sentiment, and I know she meant it, and I was excited about it, and I thought to myself, how much could a few carnations cost? I could even put dandelions in, right, if I really meant it. But you know how life goes, right? Day after day after day, and then you forget, and the best thing that I do is once a week I make sure that I tell the children to dust the vase. On anniversaries, every once in a while, we pull it out. A couple of times over the years, I've even made sure that it could show up as a surprise at her work filled with roses. But the thing is, that vase was a wedding gift and was supposed to prepare me for years of marriage. The love words that were read this morning from 1 Corinthians 13 have been read at more weddings than you can imagine. I've probably officiated about 100 or so weddings over the last 25 years, and I would say that about 70 to 80% of the couples have requested those words be read at their wedding. And why not? They're stunningly beautiful, they're well-crafted, and they seem to catch the light of the love that we share when we gather to make promises to one another. They're kind of like that beautiful crystal vase. They're just right for the occasion. But I've often wondered, as the marriages begin, how often the couples really work at living the love that's discussed in those words. I hope again and again and again that they do again and again and again. Because the words are beautiful, but they call us to action and recognition. Imagine if we lived in a world where we gave love that was patient, that was kind, that was forbearing, that did not insist on its own way. What if we could love with humility? What if we thought of the other person first? What if our love could bear all things, could forgive and hope all things? What if our love could never, ever end? Today, I want to suggest to you that as we listen to and hear these wedding words, they're in order to prepare us for long-term relatedness. They're wedding words for marriage life. What I mean by that is we often say beautiful things in our ceremonies. Our rituals try to bring for us all of the most important aspects of our lives so that we might live in that way day to day to day. But all of you here know whether you've been married or not, whether you've been married one time or many times, whether you're going to be married someday, that weddings are sometimes a lot easier, and I say sometimes, we've had some nightmare weddings. Weddings are sometimes easier than the day-to-day life of loving one another. Because sometimes, even when you are putting forth the self-giving love, the other people involved in the connected and the relationship are not doing the same. Sometimes things can't work out. And yet we still speak these wedding words about love. Why do we do that? I think we do it because we know that they're true, we know that they're necessary, and we aspire to live in those words. And we know that they tell us something about the nature of the God whom we serve. I think the same thing is true of what we just did here today at this communion table. We use wedding words at the communion table. We use ritualized language to say what we believe is best and most true about who we are as people and who God is as God. And then we strive in our daily lives to live up to those words. We said 1 Corinthians 13 kinds of things when we gathered at this table today. We said, in essence, that this table is not about me, but it's about others. It's not about exclusivity, but it's about including all. It's not about ignoring some, it's about welcoming everyone. We said at this table that we experience the embodiment of God's love when we come together and participate in the taking of the bread and the sharing of the cup. We used 1 Corinthians 13 kinds of language, beautiful, well-crafted language of love, and then we practiced. Well, that's the same thing that happens at weddings, isn't it? We talk to one another using language of love at weddings, and we encourage the young couple or the old couple or the even older couple, the new couple, to practice love. We ask them to share words of commitment with one another. We offer them an opportunity to share an embrace or a kiss. And we engage the gathered congregation and community in that moment. Why? Because we believe that every single day of their lives is going to be just like their wedding? No. But because we know that every single day of their lives will offer them an opportunity to make decisions about how they will be together. That's what happens at this table. At each moment that we break the bread and share it, at each time that we pour the cup and drink of it, we are offering ourselves an opportunity to understand using ritualized movements and actions and language what it means to participate in love. Beautiful words. Beautiful words about love, 1 Corinthians 13. In fact, about a year and a half into not giving my wife those flowers every week, I did get her a nice little framed thing from some church conference I went to that said, "Love bears all things." It even had bears on it. Very punny. As beautiful as those words are, and as beautiful as the commitment that a couple can make to one another can be, life is tough, isn't it? When I said those words to that other person 26 and a half years ago, I don't think I fully understood what it would mean to have times in our lives when we were scared to death, scared financially, or scared about housing, or scared about education, or scared because our child's leg was going to be lengthened and the first step was to saw it in half. Or scared because one of our kids was traveling, or we got a call from the school and something had been broken, like an arm. We didn't know. Just like when we come to this table, we don't know what this week is going to bring. You don't know what's going to happen. You're not sure how you might feel excluded or feel like excluding. in the next couple of days. But we practice, we remember, we lift up those beautiful, well-crafted words because they're words of truth and beauty. They're words that tell us something about who we are and who we ought to strive to be. I like that the communion table is now bound by all of these beautiful links that the children have made. These are links of relationship. The communion table is surrounded by a chain that was forged link by our young children and our giving adults participating together in sharing the message of love that we have received from Jesus Christ. As we are bound together in the breaking of the bread, these links remind us of our connectedness as Christian people. I'm excited. I hope that as the links grow, we get to keep them here in the sanctuary. I hope for each of you that the ritualized, beautiful language that we use week in and week out, remembering Jesus' words, can be wedding language that prepares us for married life. That in the ups and downs of our Christian lives together, that we will be prepared by having broken bread at this table and shared it with all who will come. That we will have been prepared by drinking from this cup together and offering it to the world, so that when the world is difficult, and y'all know the world is difficult, we will be able to bring the love that we're called to bring. Patient love, kind love, giving love, forgiving love, hoping love. I try to remember that day all those years ago when I got married, because I'm trying to remember if we said those words at our own wedding, and I can't remember. I've got to dig out the bulletin from somewhere. And what I'm really trying to remember is whether or not the selfish, young, skinny kid of about 21 years old on that day, 22 maybe, was thinking this. This is good stuff. It's all the way Susan's supposed to love me. She's supposed to be patient with me. She's supposed to be kind with me. She's supposed to make it not about her, but make it about me. If I had to guess, if we did have those words read at our wedding, this skinny 22-year-old kid might have been thinking that. He might have been thinking, this is just the person who I think will be kind to me and forgiving to me and will hope with me and put up with all of my stuff. The thing is, that's often how we enter the world, isn't it? With this beautiful vision of what love should be, and then very prepared to expect that of everyone else. Our Christian story, however, is a story of giving, sacrifice, yes, even suffering. A story that requires of us that we love in those kinds of ways, even knowing full well that sometimes others will not return that love. We are called at this table as we share together in a story of hope that is the resurrection, but also in a story of suffering that is the crucifixion, to participate in self-giving love time and time again. Here's the thing. Even though I've messed up over all the years and I haven't filled that beautiful vase with flowers, the more I've opened myself to my partner and the more I've opened myself to other people in my life, the more I've realized that they're worth my love. They're worth my sacrifice. They're worth my giving and forgiving. And it seems like, at least for a few people, the more they've opened themselves up to me, they've discovered in my humanity something that's worth it as well. So, how can we grow in the kind of love that we hear about when 1 Corinthians 13 is read to us? One is to remember always that those words of love bring something about who God is and who we're created to be to our awareness. Secondly, these words of love aren't just about how other people are supposed to love us. They're about how we're supposed to love others. And finally, they offer us opportunities to strengthen relationships. The more you get to know one another, the more you really listen, the more you open your mind, your heart, and your arms to other people and begin to understand, I believe the more there are opportunities to share true love. We have a beautiful table set before us. We've come together. We've broken bread. We've shared words of love and peace. Now, from this ritual moment, we're sent out into the days that we will spend in the world between now and the next time that we come together. As you walk amongst others this week, remember those beautiful words about love. And remember, you have been loved. You are loved fully, completely. We know this through Jesus Christ. We know this through the fact that we are created and you are called and, yes, equipped to give selflessly of that love to all others you encounter. And for that, thanks be to God.